Hit it.
Welcome to the Test Talks Podcast, the place to go to geek out on software testing. And now your host, whose mission is to help you succeed with test automation, Joe Colantonio.
Hey, welcome to another episode of Test Talks, a podcast dedicated to all things test automation related. I'm your host, Joe, from joecolantonio.com. Before we get into today's interview, I just want to give a quick shout out to Moshe Millman from Apply Tools. He's been setting me up with some awesome introductions to possible Test Talks guests, and this episode is a direct result to one of those introductions from Moshe. So today, we're going to be talking all things Appium with the creator of Appium himself, Dan Quaylar, and we'll learn all about how to test mobile applications. Check it out. Test Talks is sponsored by the fantastic folks at Sauce Labs, the cloud-based automated testing platform that eliminates the need to maintain your own Selenium grid and test infrastructure. Try it for free today. Visit testtalks.com and click on the Sign Up Now link under the homepage sponsor section. Hey, Dan, welcome to Test Talks.
Thanks for having me, Joe.
It's great to have you on the show. Today, I'd like to talk about Appium. And since you're the creator of Appium, what better person to ask? So in a nutshell, for people that don't know, what is Appium?
Appium is a cross-platform mobile UI automation framework. It allows you to write UI tests for your mobile apps for Android, iOS, and some other OSs. Maybe Windows Phone soon. We can talk about that later. Cool. And it lets you write it using the Selenium JSON Wire protocol you know and love from web automation.
I'm always fascinated by people that actually develop software and then make it open source. So why did you feel the need to create Appium?
Okay, yeah, interesting. Necessity is the mother of invention, I guess, is sort of, you know, it's pretty typical. I took a job, my second job ever. I was in charge of the test organization at a dating site called Zeus.com in San Francisco. And when I got to the job, mobile apps were still kind of, they were popular, but they weren't, it wasn't mobile first quite yet at the time. And we had decided as a company to go to sort of really dive into mobile, which none of the other dating sites had done really at the time. They had all done HTML5 apps, but we went full native right away. And the problem we were having was with the iOS app in particular. It was that when we would make a mistake, which, you know, at a startup, especially one run by people who are used to the web, where if you make a mistake, you can just deploy new code to the servers and everyone gets the fix instantly. That wasn't the case on iOS because of the App Store and the App Store review process. For those of you not familiar with it, which many of you may be, the way Apple's App Store worked, especially back then, they've made an effort in the last few months to get better about this, but you would submit your application and you submit the application to them and they would run some static analysis on it, then they'd review the app and they'd try out some scenarios, and all in all, it would take about usually 4 to 5 days from when you submitted the app for you to be able to actually put it in the store so your customers could download it. And what was happening with our app was that we would move fast and break stuff, you know, as was the culture at the time, and, you know, was the culture in web startup era anyway. And it cost us a lot of money because we were actually pulling a good chunk of change in on mobile. But when we broke stuff, it would take us 5 days to get a patch out to customers, you know, plus the development time and the investigation time and all that. And so if we broke something like chat on the dating site, we'd have to live with it for 5 days. And none of our mobile people could chat. And sometimes even longer, because back then there wasn't the auto update functionality on iOS or Android like there is now.
Wow.
And so you'd actually have to have customers opt into the update. And so because of that, I thought, you know, as the head of testing, like, how do we tackle this? And then I'm like, well, I used to work at a website. We just used Selenium for everything. And then, you know, that was sort of how we caught this kind of stuff. And I looked around at the tool set. It all really sucked. I won't name names, but back then, this is 2010 or whatever it was at the time, and there was Robodium and there were some other things out there, and they just really were very primitive, and you couldn't write stable, well-architected tests with them. And so I asked my boss, like, hey, can I have a couple weeks and see if I can build something better than all this stuff out there? And it took about 2 or 3 days, but me and the iOS lead, a guy named James Infocino, put together this thing that bootstrapped on top of the UI automation JavaScript and lets you send Selenium commands to it in real time. And it took what was painful automation with the UI automation JavaScript, where you'd run these static JavaScript tests in the profiler called Instruments for iOS. And we opened it up to where we could write it in C# along with our web automation. We could reuse all of our existing test API code and all that and run it along with the existing tests and even reuse some of the tests and things like that. That was sort of how it came about. Just everything out there was terrible, and I didn't want to make my team have to use it. And so I took a couple of weeks, and then Appium, what's called Appium now, was born out of that.
What's your place now with the project?
Fair enough. I would say largely mascot at the moment. I go to a dozen conferences a year or more. I think in the next 3 months, I have Tel Aviv, Kiev, Istanbul, Siberia, wow, Latvia. I don't know what. This is the next 3 months. I have to look at my calendar, but it's really bad. But I'll go anywhere that'll have me. So if anyone here is listening, looking at you, South America, I haven't been yet. Feel free to invite me. I do contribute a little here and there, but like largely Sauce Labs has so many full-time employees working on it, along with a few other companies that have contributed some people, that I haven't been like a heavy contributor in 2 or 3 years at this point. And so there's a lot of people. It's not just me. I made the thing. But without the guys at Sauce Labs, it never takes off. And, you know, without people like Jonathan Lips and some other people, like, it doesn't get as big as it has. I'm not needed to build this stuff anymore. And at this point, the problems we're solving, I guess, it's always that kind of, like, thing everyone likes to do. Oh, I want to do the fun part. And then everyone else can sort out the details. And we're sort of at the point where, like, oh, there's a new Android SDK. We need to make it work with Appium. And I guess that really doesn't interest me, per se, right? It's kind of nitty-gritty. I'm always interested in the high level, like, oh, Windows Phone doesn't work with Appium. That's what I want to work on. Or, oh, you know, iWatch doesn't work with it. Apple Watch doesn't work with it. So, yes, I do work on the GUIs, as I think I'm the only one on the project. I think there's one other person that knows how to write Cocoa apps. But other than that, and I'm actually in the process of making it work for 1.5 at the moment. But I don't contribute so much. I more just probably spend about 30 or 45 nights a year in a hotel room somewhere, just going out wherever will have me, whatever weird corner of the world, with whatever weird, terrible Siberian winter that they're having, and just go and talk for 45 minutes and meet people and all that kind of stuff, and just try and promote the product.
Awesome. It seems like it's almost like Selenium was a few years ago. More and more people are talking about it, and all of a sudden Selenium took off as the tool to use for automating web browsers. So do you see that as a reflection point now with Appium, that Appium has reached that point where the amount of adoption now is, if someone's starting mobile app development testing, that they probably would use Appium?
Yeah. I've been sent some charts and things by different people that sort of show that at some point, I think about a year ago, Appium passed out Robodium. And then it had passed, you know, Calabash was also a big player for a while as well. And so it seems like finally, maybe about a year ago, that started to happen. And then there was a big month we had where I think Amazon came on board and Xamarin came on board and Perfecto, and there was like 1 week where just like 5 or 6 big players all decided to put Appium in their clouds, and that was like a huge win. And so when you see big companies like that, and then there's some people at Microsoft actually working right now on getting Appium support built into the mobile operating system at the moment. So you're seeing all these like big companies start to support it now, and that's, yeah, I definitely think we've hit that point where it's tipped a bit.
Awesome. I think that goes back to the Appium philosophy. Did you create the Appium philosophy, or is that something that someone else came up with? I guess there's some main core principles that Appium, the project, believes in.
So, yeah, though that I'm not exactly sure who you can attribute it to. I think I'd have to go back and check the tape. Jason Huggins, who originally created Selenium and used to work at Sauce Labs, when we had this conference called the Mobile Test Summit, and basically what Sauce Labs had done, unbeknownst to all of the speakers at the conference, myself included, was they had sort of gathered all the people that made all the tools. You know, the Calabash people were there, Sikuli people were there, all the big tools at the time. This was in 2011, I want to say. And they sort of wanted to pick one to put in their cloud. And Jason had designed this rubric sort of for grading them. And he presented it as part of the keynote of that conference. And the Appium philosophy you see is largely based on that rubric he put out.
Okay.
For like what makes a good automation tool. So you'll see that like you don't have to modify the application under test. That's like a huge one. It runs in whatever language I want to run it in. It's open source. It's free. All those kind of things that other tools like Calabash, you do have to modify your app. Frank, you have to modify your app. There are other tools that aren't free, you know, Soasta and whatnot. And so that was sort of the rubric that SOS was using to sort of pick the tool they wanted to put in their cloud. And they eventually got all on board with Appian because it sort of met that rubric that Jason put out. And I think the Appian philosophy, it was definitely written by the guys at SOS Labs, not me. I definitely thought about it, though. Like, I definitely, when I was making Appian, like, in my head, I'm like, those were the things that I thought were important.
How does something like Appian work with all these different language bindings, all these different technologies? Can you just explain a little bit more? I guess you mentioned the JSON protocol. Mm-hmm. Is that what does the translation behind the scenes through an API that makes it possible to just kind of interpret whatever you're sending it and just switch it over to what Selenium needs or the application test needs?
The way you can think of Appian is it's just a server that runs, and it listens for HTTP requests just like any other server. And all the language bindings, the C#, the Python, the Ruby, whatever, all they do is just send web requests to the server. And so because we use the same protocol as Selenium, we were able to steal all their code, not steal, but, you know, so repurpose and reuse and share like all their language bindings that people had built up over the years for PHP and all these Perl and all these weird languages. And since we talk the same protocol over HTTP, their bindings could just talk to us and we could talk back to them. And that's how it works with all of them with little effort. It's just that Appian is just, it's a JavaScript app. It runs in Node.js and it sits there and it just listens for web requests. And then we already had the Selenium clients that could send those kinds of web requests and we just hooked them in.
As I mentioned earlier, I actually got an email recently about someone that asked me a question about Appian. Now, I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but he said that his team doesn't want to use it yet because they read in the Xcode 7 release notes that the existing UI automation support and instruments is deprecated.
Fret not, my friend. Appian 1.5 includes an iOS implementation which does not use UI automation JavaScript, but rather uses the new Swift XCUI test library. And so we are future-proof going forward. So we will continue to work with versions of Xcode that do continue to support UI automation JavaScript. And 1.5, which is currently in the latter stages of beta and should be out any minute or day now or something, supports XCUI test. And it supports some other things that, yeah. So we're covered. Don't worry. You won't be having to switch frameworks in 5 months whenever Xcode 8 comes out.
Awesome. Yeah, that's great news. Because that was the first time I heard of it, and I panicked and looked and noticed that he was right. So just so happened that I was talking to you today. So awesome. Great answer.
Yeah, don't worry. We thought of it. It's covered.
So along the same lines, can you talk a little bit about the roadmap? Where do you see Appian 1.5 or 2? I don't know if you can even talk about it or not make commitments, but is there anything you can allude to, what you plan on or what your vision is for Appian in the future?
Yeah, so 1.5, which is going to release really soon, was a total rewrite of the whole thing to make it stable and sane. Appian sort of had been monkey patched for 3 years to just add things left and right. And so the guys at SOS, I don't remember how long ago, maybe it was May, they just sat down and said, we need to make this maintainable. And so it's been rewritten in ES7, I think. And now it's no longer, you know, callback pyramids 40 levels deep, things like that. It's sane, async await structured. It's very modularized now to where if you wanted to add support for a new operating system, you can inherit most of the implementation from a base class and then just implement a few methods here and there to do it. But coming in it, there's a lot of cool things. So for one, there's the two new iOS support system. So we have the old UI automation JS implementation that I wrote way back in the day that is going to be deprecated in about 5 months or so I've been told. But there's a new one that uses the newer framework XCUI test, and there's also one that uses the Facebook WebDriver agent framework. Cool. And there's some cool advantages you get with each. So with the Facebook, the WebDriver agent framework, it can do things like multiple simulators. You can automate apps that you don't have the source code for. You can automate UI, OS dialogues, things like that. With the XCUI test, but I guess the Facebook one won't run on a real device. And then with the XCUI test one, you get the one that Apple provides, and you can run on real devices, and it basically does everything the old one did before. But the Facebook one will do, I think, multiple simulators at the same time, which is something we hadn't been able to do on iOS without some crazy hacks. So there's a lot of cool stuff you're going to be able to do on the simulator in 1.5 that you couldn't do before. So things like logging with Facebook or, you know, adding contacts in the contacts app, changing system preferences, all that you're going to be able to automate with the new one, I believe, with that for simulators. And then with real devices, you'll get support going forward. And the nice thing is, if you do use a legacy device, an iOS 6, 7, 8 device, Appium is that translation layer in the middle that can fork it over to the right framework to automate that device. So we'll continue to support the older implementations for legacy devices, much like we do for Android, where we use Celandroid for anything API 15 or lower, I believe, which at this point, there aren't a lot of Android devices out there with that API, but in theory, if you were in a market where that was important, you could do it. And then I guess the other thing is, not in 1.5, but coming soon, we're rewriting the Android support to use the new UI Automator 2 framework that Google released a little while ago, and that will make it much more stable and much more reliable as well. And then I also mentioned that Microsoft is, I've been told, there's some three guys there I've been in an email thread with, that they're working on getting Appium work out of the box with the new Windows OSs on desktop and mobile.
Awesome. And like I said, just how Selenium has taken the lead, it sounds like Appium is also taking the lead for mobile automation. So I get a lot of emails. So I would say that people should not worry about investing in it, because it sounds like you have a very active community. You have some big companies like Sauce Labs and sounds like Microsoft that actually know about it and are supporting it. So that's a good sign with any project.
Yeah, there's a lot of big companies out there that are using it now. I don't know if I can name names, but you know, a lot of the bigger companies are out there using it. I mean, some of them don't. But yeah, there are bigger ones like Amazon that support it in their cloud, and then there's places like Salesforce and LinkedIn that use it on their stuff, and you know, so it's has some bigger adoption now, which is good. And but a lot of the small guys as well too. I know that with the 1.0, I think we hit 180,000 downloads of it, so there's quite a lot.
Wow.
And that was 2 years ago, so I don't know what it is now, but yeah, it could be a lot more than that.
Are there things you see over and over again that you think most people using Appium are doing wrong? Or you scratch your head and like, why are they using it like this? Or that's probably not a best practice or a good idea?
Yeah. Some of it's my own fault. Yeah, the recorder. It hasn't been updated in 3 years. I don't know if it generates valid code anymore. A lot of people, I see using that. And it was sort of there just kind of for fun, and then it's never been maintained.
Yep.
What's some other stuff I see? The crazy XPath, you know, that you always see where it's like people will copy the XPath from the inspector where it has like, you know, it basically just lists every element in the DOM and gives it an index for what order it's in. So you make these really brittle locators for all your tests. See that kind of thing. I think other things that shake my head at. A lot of times people don't know about how to automate hybrid apps. I mean, that's sort of more our fault for not. I mean, it's sort of not obvious, but they don't know to switch the context, and then they'll get, you know, regular Selenium tests inside the web view object. Yeah, stuff like that, I guess. But in general, like, there are a lot of companies out there putting out and training people better. So it's not nearly as bad as it used to be. When the project first started, we would look at the message board every day and we'd see the same 10 questions. And there'd be some bugs where I'm just like, we should just fix this because I'm tired of answering it over and over again. But in general, I think people are picking it up pretty quickly, and there's enough. The Google returns pretty good results for most common problems nowadays, which is nice.
Is there anything you see in the future, any new mobile testing trends you think coming up that most testers need to be aware of, or anything you see on the horizon that you think is just about to explode that people need to get their heads around, you know, including mobile for mobile testing or anything like that?
And there's this whole idea of like, it was just the phone and now it's the phone in the watch or the phone in the car and the phone in the house. We're working on some of that, like getting Apple Watch support into Appium and things like that. That's something that's a bit newer and a bit different. I mean, Apple has gone sort of resolution crazy now. And Android's sort of always been there where it could always be any shape and any size. But you're sort of seeing that on Apple now, which is a whole new pile of bugs for people. Yeah, I guess it's kind of in a rut right now, right? There's not a whole lot. Like, it's not like when the iPhone came out like 8 years ago or whatever it was and everything's changing every week. So yeah, it's staying pretty stable, I think, at the moment.
Cool.
People are kind of running out of ideas. Like, what else can I put on my phone?
Just curious, how did you end up in London after working in the Valley for a while?
Oh, all right. This is an interesting question. In general, I guess, I found myself working 7 to 7 every day in the Valley and, you know, on call out of the weekends for when disasters would happen and things like that. And I just thought to myself, like, there's got to be something better, right? And, you know, I'd always heard, you know, that over in Europe, you know, that people don't work as much as we do in America. And I've also never lived abroad, and I kind of wanted to do it as like a mind-bending kind of thing and just try it out. And you know, there's some other stuff in there where I kind of wanted to sort of slow down a bit. And so, yeah, I thought maybe give it a go. And I found that Shazam needed someone to manage their testing. And like, I'm a music/computer science student, right? Degree.
Cool.
And so like, Shazam seemed like a good fit. And, you know, I've been at the dating site for about 3 years, and I kind of like, I think I'd done whatever there was to do there at the time. And so, yeah, it was a good time, and that was in London. And so I took it. And yeah, I really enjoy that, you know, I get 25 holidays a year, or just vacation days, I should say. I'm in America right now on this radio thing, but I'm imagining most of the audience is not British. But yeah, I get 25 vacation days now. I generally work 8 or 9 hours a day. It's not 12. It's been a good experience from like a personal growth thing. I've learned, I look at the world very differently now. There's things that I never questioned before, you know, that now like I see that people don't think the same way over here. You know, just silly stuff like in America, newer is always better, right? And Britain, that's not the case at all. Almost like older is better. You know, in like America, it's sort of designed around like working long hours. Like the food is fast. Everything's open late. You know, everything's open weekends. You know, like, and here, like on Sunday, things are open 12 to 5. If I need to go to a pharmacy, I can only go between like 8 in the morning and 6. And so it's kind of silly stuff like that. But I'm like, oh, yeah, I remember when we were like that. And, you know, and then I guess also I manage people out here. And it's been like a good growth from like a manager perspective to say, like, how do you motivate people that aren't American? I feel like in America, we're very ambitious. We're very, you know, like the guy that, you know, makes your Slurpee at 7-Eleven thinks he's going to own the place. You know, like, you know what I mean? Like everyone on American Idol thinks they're famous. Everyone just needs to hear them sing. That's definitely not the case here at all. So I don't know why it is. I'm not whatever. But, you know, there's silly things like that. And so it's been like a challenge. Like, how do you sort of get through to a different culture? Like when people come to America, they sort of buy into the whole American dream, work hard, and I'll be rewarded kind of thing. Yeah. And in a different country, that you sort of have to buy into the way they think. And so it's not that way here. And it's been sort of an interesting challenge and just little other things like that. And I've gotten to see a part of the world. You know, I get to travel to conferences over here all the time. And so I've gotten to see probably 24 countries in the last year and a half. You know, just all I have to go is talk for half an hour and they'll get me a flight and a hotel. Nice. Feed me. So, yeah, I guess there's a bunch of other reasons behind it. But mainly I wanted to, I realized all I was doing was working and there was more to life than that. And I want to give it a try and try something different. And I've really enjoyed it. I don't think I'm coming back.
Wow.
No. Yeah. I mean, I like America and I don't want it to change and I want it to keep doing what it does, but I enjoy other stuff too. And I like having a little more balance out here. That's sort of part of the story, I guess. It's sort of, yeah. I mean, I guess in the end of the day, like the guy who came up with the thing everyone uses now, this wasn't developed by, you know, Elon Musk or some of his brainiacs over, you know, in a secret bunker in New Mexico or whatever. Like, I was just a guy that was tired of losing money and getting yelled at by my boss because shit kept breaking. And so I sat there and I built this thing and I came to a conference in London. I applied to talk about something entirely different. And it was at the Savoy here in London. It was the Selenium Conference of 2012, I think. And as part of my talk, I showed off that I was using the Selenium protocol to control iOS apps, and people just went nuts. They were like, what? You're doing that? How are you doing it? And so I gave a lightning talk at the end of the conference, and people just told me, oh, you have to give a lightning talk, and show us how it works. And I showed everyone how it works, and it was so funny. Everyone clapped and cheered, and there was fanfare, and I thought, oh, wow, people are really going to like this. And then I heard nothing for like 3 months. No one emailed me. No one called me. Like, it was like, didn't even happen. And then over time, eventually, like, Jason Huggins from Sauce Labs invited me to a bar one day, like 3 months later in San Francisco, and said, show it to some of my guys. And then eventually the whole thing takes off and whatever. But I guess the whole moral of the story from my perspective is, like, people should share their crazy ideas with people and open source more stuff and, you know, and just be more transparent about some of the cool stuff they come up with, because it might be quite useful to people. I mean, it probably won't be. But like, and I've done other stuff lately that like no one seems to give a crap about. You know, not everything is like this, but like, you know, it might also be like something like Appium that's like ends up being really, really important to people. And so I always leave with like, you know, you may be like some random, you know, Selenium whatever Selenium developer at some company, but you might have some good ideas too, and you should go to conferences, you should blog, and you should tell people about them, because you know you can do this too. I'm no smarter than you guys, right? Like, I'm one of you. Like, I'm not, you know, I didn't go to the you know, I don't work at a fancy company or whatever, and I don't do all that kind of stuff. I worked at a dating site, and I just needed to make this thing, and I made it. And so I always want and try to encourage people to do the same sort of thing and not, you know, just sort of think outside the box. Not what is everyone else doing, but what is everyone else not doing, and sort of what else can be done. Because most people will just go out and like, oh, I'll read a few blog posts and see what the experts are saying is the tool to use. And I guess that's not what I did. I did that first, but then I said, well, this is all terrible. And then Appium was born, right?
I'm sure a lot of people are going to be inspired by this. So how can someone contribute to Appium? Can they contribute? Is there a process in place? Do you encourage that?
Yeah. We have probably around 100 contributors to Appium, like all time, 100 and something. Probably about 20 regulars, maybe a little more. Actually, I could get the number, but I won't. It could be more like 200. I haven't looked at it in a while. But Jonathan just did a presentation in San Francisco this week, and he posted his slides up, and it explains the whole layout of the new Appium 1.5 architecture. It's quite modularized. And it's a lot friendlier now that it's not callback hell. So it's a lot easier to contribute. But even if not that, Stack Overflow is, you know, people who are experts can post answers there. There's also documentation that needs to be written. There's a website that is 4 years old that could probably use a facelift. You know, I mean, Bootstrap has sort of gone out of fashion, I think. So it might be nice to have one. And the website sort of it doesn't really convey the modern idea of what Appium is anymore anyway. But there's just tons of stuff people can do that would be quite useful. So I always encourage it. And it's a good way, like, if you're a graduate student, or I guess what you guys would say, a new grad in America, you know, it's a good way to sort of, for job interviews, get some patches contributed to Appium. People eat that up if your GitHub has all sorts of cool bug fixes and stuff on it. And you learn well, because I will say that we have some tough code reviewers, and you will learn to write better JavaScript. And write unit tests and things like that. So I think it's just a good opportunity for anybody to get into it and learn some stuff. And, you know, it don't always be taking, right? Like, we all use open source software. A lot of us do for our work. It's kind of nice to sort of pay back a little, right?
I think more people should do, like you said, is just go out and try something and see, just help people and give back.
Yeah, there's a Steve Jobs quote there. And I think it's like, once you learn that the people came before you are no smarter than you were, and that the things they made, you know, were just their best idea at the time, and that you can sort of change and influence that, like, you'll never be the same, is the quote, right? I think that that's totally true. Like, question everything. Like, just because, you know, the guys at Facebook use this thing doesn't mean it's the best solution. I think Appium is sort of a shining example of something like that.
Okay, Dan, before I go, is there one piece of actionable advice you can give someone to improve their Appium automation efforts, and let us know the best way to find or contact you?
I would say read the release notes, because we're always tweaking stuff and making it better, and a lot of times that knowledge doesn't get out any other way. So we do releases almost every 2 weeks, I feel like, at this point. Yeah, I would say read the release notes, and there's good stuff in there, and it'll also prevent a lot of, we get the same bugs logged over and over and over again. I think we have 800 bugs right now in the Appium repository. Wow. And I think there's probably only like 50 actual bugs, but you know, they all appear like 40 times each. And then best way to contact me. Well, I'm on Twitter. My last name is hard to spell. My Twitter handle has my last name in it, but it's the is in like the word the, and then Dan is in the first three letters of Daniel. And then my last name is spelled C as in California, U as in umbrella, E as in elephant, L as in library, L as in library. A is in Apple, R is in radio. That's my Twitter handle. The website is appium.io. If anyone could explain to me why all the things end in IO now, I never found that out, but we have a .io domain, and it seems to be hip and cool. Those are probably the best ways. Twitter, I like Twitter. It's my favorite. And now we're going to be able to send, 10,000 character tweets, so you can send me actual questions on Twitter.
Thank you, Dan, for your Appium open source awesomeness. For links to everything of value that we talked about in this episode, head on over to testtalks.com/86. And while you're there, make sure to click on the sign up free button under the exclusive sponsor section to learn all about Sauce Labs' awesome products and services. If this episode has helped you in any way, why not share it with a friend or coworker? And together, we could spread automation awesomeness to the masses. So that's it for this week's episode of Test Talks. I'm Joe, and my mission is to help you succeed with automation awesomeness. As always, test everything and keep the good. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Test Talks podcast. Head on over to www.testtalks.com for full show notes, amazing blog articles, and other automation awesomeness.